Good morning and welcome to hour number two of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Henry Frayne is at the controls this morning. Well, you know, from time to time here on the program throughout the year, we have physicians on the program. We have some that, like Dr. Jeff Swearingen, who is a family practice doctor who can try to respond to almost anything. And then we have people who specialize in doing particular things and looking at particular parts of the body. And one of the things that we have done now at least one time a year for a long, long time is to give people an opportunity to ask questions about the back and back trouble, because certainly we know that it can be a source of a lot of pain and discomfort for a lot of folks. I think at some point, almost everyone experiences some kind of back pain. It can be a problem for a while. For some people, it can be a long-term problem. And so with us here on the show to talk about this very subject, we have Dr. James Harms. He is a board-certified orthopedic spine surgeon, has been an active spine specialist at Carle Clinic in Urbana for now almost 25 years. He also does some teaching at the University of Illinois. He's part of the Carle Spine Institute and has been good enough over the years to be here on a number of occasions to talk about the back and also to answer questions. So if people are listening, if you have some kind of problem, now, you know, whenever we have a physician on the show, I always try to remind folks that we cannot do diagnosis over the phone. There are some limits as to what we can do, but we do these programs to give you a chance to ask questions. It's a place to start. You can add to your basic knowledge, and then, of course, you may well have to go on and talk with a doctor who can see you. But having said all that, I always try to say those sorts of things at the beginning. But having said all that, I certainly don't want to discourage anyone from calling. And that I know if you have questions, that the doctor would do his best to help you out. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. And that one is good anywhere that you can hear us. And that is 800-222-9455. So again, 333-9455 for here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, thank you once again for being here.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Appreciate it. Whenever we do this, we try to talk in kind of basic terms about the back and how it's put together and basic problems. And we also talk about what's new developments. There are always new things that are coming along. And I'm sure that throughout the time of your practice, there are always things that you said to yourself at some point, I wish we could do this. And then maybe if you're lucky, sometime later down the road, it is possible for you to do that thing. So the kinds of treatments and the kinds of procedures that you can do always change all the time. Is there anything that right now at the moment, or say, you know, within the last year that has come along that for you working in this area is particularly exciting?
Are you hinting that I've been at this for a long time?
Well, it says, this is your official bio now. It just say almost 25 years. That's, I don't know, in the history of medicine, if a quarter century is a long time or not.
Obviously, there are lots of things that have changed. We've been able to look inside people with CAT scans and MRIs so much better than when I started with plain x-rays and myelograms. We've had tremendous progress with disc replacement. Hmm. As you know, lumbar disc replacement was approved by the FDA some 2.5 years ago. The problem is that there are no insurance companies in our area that will cover it, so there haven't been that many done in East Central Illinois. On the other hand, it is available. More exciting are the cervical disc replacements, because you don't have to go push the intestines out of the way, because there are no big arteries right in front of the spine at that location, because the cervical spine seems to be more mobile than the lumbar spine. There are great theoretical advantages, and it looks like one of those artificial discs will be approved in the near future. Obviously, we've all liked to think, gee, could I just stick a needle in a person and put in some magic juice or a chemical and cure their problem? Unfortunately, that's still on the horizon. But there are experiments being done in animals and maybe a few in humans where growth hormone or growth hormone-like substances are being injected into discs to see if we can get them, scientists can see if those discs can regenerate. So there are lots of exciting things still happening. The minimally invasive surgeries are taking off in the lumbar spine. For some years, there has been the technology to do such things, but as the instruments are improving and as patients are demanding more and more of such procedures, now it's fairly easy to take out a disc bulge, a herniated disc, through a tube and either loops, which are magnifying glasses, or a microscope. It's there are some of us surgeons who are doing spine fusions through three or four small incisions and putting in bone and screws and rods with minimally invasive approach. For people who have a problem called spinal stenosis, where spurs are rubbing on the nerves, it is now possible, if they're not in very good health and willing to accept a little less definitive procedure, it's possible to put a spacer in between the bones in the back of the spine to help with the difficulty walking any distance. So over the last 3 to 5 years, there have been lots of exciting developments, and as long as there's money going into research, I look forward to even more things over the next 5 to 10 years.
Okay. Well, we have one person here who would like to talk with you, and other people who are listening, they're certainly welcome. We'll start out with a caller in Urbana, and it's line number one right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question. I have a problem with dystonia, and it's mainly the muscles of my back pressing against my spine. Enough so that, like, the last time I went to a physical therapist, one of my vertebrae in my thoracic area was a quarter turn off. And I was wondering what ideas or suggestions you could make for the degree of back pain that I'm experiencing due to dystonia.
For our listeners that don't know what dystonia is, I would summarize it by saying it's a movement disorder where the nerves, or the brain more correctly, sends out signals for the muscles to contract or move even when it doesn't accomplish what the individual wants it to. That can be shaking of the head, that can be shaking of the arms, it can be movements in the trunk, and it seems that you have this in the thoracic area of your spine. Those movements can exaggerate, because the spine doesn't get to rest as much, some underlying problems. For example, if you have a disc aging before its time, those extra movements might cause you to have symptoms there when you might not otherwise have them. It also might cause wear and tear problems. Now, we've got to be careful in your situation, because some people can have an X-ray that shows a slight turn in a vertebral body who do not have dystonia. So it's not necessarily cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
I think that on the drastic side, you could undergo a major spinal fusion that would stop motion at the area. But I think that something less than that would be appropriate. I think that your therapist can help you with some stretching exercises or massage therapy. Your medical doctor could help you with some medications that could decrease the movements, or would send you to a neurologist, that's a medical nerve doctor who specializes in such things, to look for a medication that can help. Generally, this would not be handled by a spine surgeon such as myself, but if you're looking for expertise, a rehabilitation medicine doctor, physical medicine and rehabilitation, would be the type of person who could help, particularly with your activities of daily living and probably with medications that could suppress these symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Are any of those comments helpful?
Yes.
Have you seen a neurologist or a physical medicine doctor yet?
Yes. I've also been to two different clinics that specialize in movement disorder neurology. I'm still waiting the results from Rush Presbyterian Hospital in Chicago. The medications they've put me on haven't been very effective. I have a lot of pain, especially in one place of my spine, and I have, is it leviscoliosis? And I don't know if that's playing into it or what.
Well, if you have a curvature of the spine or scoliosis, that is much more likely causing the rotation of your spine than your dystonia. I would also say that if you've been to the Presbyterian St. Luke's Movement Disorder Center, you've gone to the best in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. Remember that us physicians are not all-knowing, and it makes sense to stick with them and to try the medications for the specified length of time. And if that doesn't work, to go back and say, gee, I didn't get the good result that I'd like. Is there some other medication that helps some of the time that I might try? Because we don't always get it right the first time.
Have you heard of tetrabenazine?
I've heard of that chemical before, but I don't deal with movement disorders directly. I just have to know what they are and how it affects the spine in general. So you're going to need to kick that back to your movement disorder specialist.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Others are certainly welcome here on the show in this hour. Our guest is Dr. Jim Harms. He's an orthopedic surgeon, part of the staff at Carl Clinic Spine Institute. And every once in a while, he is here and we talk about the back. He's been good enough to come give some time. And if people who are listening have questions, basic questions about the back, care of the back, things that can go wrong with it, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And the next caller is in Champaign. This is line two.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm a gradually aging academic, and unfortunately for about 20 years I sat in front of my computer not doing much exercise, and I developed something that the orthopedic doctor I spoke to calls ridiculitis. I don't know if that's exactly what it is, but at any rate, that's what he calls it. And basically, my layman's explanation of what it is that in the notches in my spine, in the area between those notches, the cartilage has gradually sort of disappeared. and so it does the equivalent of pinching the nerve in the back. And so every once in a while, well, two things. One is that I've had no feeling in my thumb for about 3 or 4 years now. And the other is that every once in a while it'll flare up and I get tremendous inflammation in the back. And the one thing that's worked great was prednisone. But I'm just wondering in terms of whether if there are any other possibilities. I certainly hesitate, obviously, at the idea of surgery. But at any rate, I was curious what your view of that sort of thing was.
Yes. First of all, I want to thank you. I've not heard the term gradually aging academic before. I'm going to have to add that to my vocabulary.
I'm still in my 40s, you see. You know, it's
then I would say prematurely graduating.
Okay.
Gradually aging academic. Ridiculitis refers to abnormal signals coming out of a nerve, going usually to an extremity. Mm-hmm. So if you have pain shooting down the arm, mm-hmm. numbness,
right.
or weakness, if you have the similar type of situation in the leg, that would be ridiculitis.
Mm-hmm.
That generally is a nonspecific term mm-hmm. and doesn't say what the cause is.
Oh, I see.
A ridiculitis could come from a spur poking on a nerve. Mm-hmm. It could come from a herniated disc. It could come from a tumor. It could come from a problem with the nerve itself.
Oh, okay.
Given the fact that prednisone helps it, that would tend to indicate to me that it's pressure on a nerve that's causing your symptoms.
Right, that's what I've been told, yeah.
Given the fact that it goes to your thumb, that would indicate that the problem is most likely, that part of the problem, is most likely coming from the disc area between C5 and C6 in the mid-lower neck.
All right, that's pretty much where they identified. I can't remember which part of the C's, but somewhere around there.
So you could have a similar type of problem happening in your lower back, because if you inherited the genes for your neck to age prematurely, you might also have gotten the genes for your lower back to age prematurely.
Right, right.
There are lots of things that can be done short of surgery. For example, when you get a flare-up of your problem, traction might help quite a bit. I tell people, go to physical therapy, try the traction in the department. If it helps, then they can assist you in getting a home unit to use.
Right, right.
Exercises to strengthen the neck muscles of the neck and upper back can often help, maybe 70% of the time. And there are specific exercises for people with extremity pain called the McKenzie exercises. And those, in 65, 70% of the time, can help extremity symptoms, either neck or lower back, quite reliably. Now, it's not a cure, right, but many people just need something to help them on an episodic basis. If things get terrible, then you'd be a candidate for an MRI and an injection or surgery.
Right.
But I think with exercises, you can probably do quite well.
Yeah. Well, yoga has helped a lot in my case, and just that I don't get these flare-ups very often at all anymore. But the feeling in the thumb isn't coming back, and I guess there really is nothing I can do about that, right?
In general, what comes and stays is permanent.
Yeah.
What comes and goes is less permanent. Mm-hmm. You probably could get some improvement if you were to have surgery, but if you're not in pain, I don't know many people who would agree to have surgery for a little thumb numbness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't even take medicine for it unless I have a flare-up. So, yeah, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Right, well, thanks for the call. Well, I'm glad to hear that radiculitis is – that sounds like something to me that Groucho Marx would have made up. In fact, I have attacks of radiculitis several times during the day, but it really is a real thing.
You probably would have done a little bit better with a cigar in your mouth, but yes, it really is a real thing.
All right. Well, I don't want to minimize the caller's discomfort or anybody else's. Pain bite, whatever name, is no fun. Questions welcome here. We have some other folks. Urbana's next, line number one. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm another middle-aged guy. I don't have any specific problem other than some lower back stiffness. I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit, though, about exercises in general for preventative maintenance type things.
Yes, one of my favorite topics. In fact, low back pain is quite common, as our host mentioned earlier. Even 10% of 10-year-olds and 15% of 15-year-olds, numbers that are easy for me to remember, can have some complaints of back pain. And if you were to put those individuals through an MRI, one could see abnormalities. So we think that about 50% of degenerative conditions are on a genetic basis. A stiff lower back would indicate some early arthritis. Soreness and stiffness when in one position for a long time is the hallmark of arthritis. So if you get up in the morning and the first couple steps are difficult, after a long car ride or watching a movie, it takes you a while to straighten up, that would be arthritis. In general, flexibility or stretching exercises, like the last caller mentioned, yoga is particularly good. Those kind of things generally help. There's such a thing as a care of the back booklet, and a lot of people find that if they do 2 minutes of stretching exercises before they get out of bed in the morning, it helps tremendously. Some people do them for a minute or two before they go to bed at night as well, and that seems to help. So flexibility exercises will be the best thing for you. In general, you also ought to be getting some cardiovascular fitness exercise. That seems to help as well. I think walking 2 to 3 miles 5 to 7 times a day is wonderful. If you don't like our fine Illinois weather, then exercise, bicycle riding, Nordic track, swimming laps, whatever you and your back can agree on would be fine. For the stiffness, keeping the abdominal and back muscles strong isn't going to be quite as helpful, but for back pain with activity, the core strength is very important. Ibuprofen or Aleve can also help with your stiffness, but I think the flexibility exercises should be your first line of defense.
Great. Where can I get the Care of Back booklet? Is that online somewhere?
Maybe. However, if you will call the Carl Spine Institute, we'd be happy to send you either our booklet with general spine care or one of the Care of the Back booklets. And the red-covered one on pages 12 and 13 have basic exercises that almost everybody can do.
Great. And the stiffness and soreness in the lower back has now started somewhat when I try to jog, as I'm as my foot hits the ground, I get some pain down there. Is that likely to be arthritis related, like you mentioned?
Help me out. What does pain down there mean? Can you pin down that location for me?
Yeah, just the lowest part of my back.
That would indicate that you probably have some degenerating disc type of situation as well. Impact loading would irritate the disc a bit. I would recommend that you look for a softer surface to run on or add some shoe inserts that would give you extra padding to cut down on the impact load that your back sees during the heel strike.
Okay. And if I wanted to follow up on that, checking it out further, who should I see, or what kind of diagnostics would you suggest?
You got a couple choices. First of all, it would be quite reasonable to see your primary care doctor, and maybe a simple back x-ray would help it out. We would be happy to see you at the Carl Spine Institute. We have rehabilitation medical doctors who are specifically trained in the non-operative management and diagnosis of such problems. So it's your choice, whatever you're most comfortable with.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Right,
thank you. We're about midway through here. We have another call we get right to, and our guest is Dr. James Harms. He's an orthopedic surgeon. He works at Carl Clinic Spine Institute, has been with us on and off over the years quite a few times to talk about the back. And if you have questions, I know he'll do his best to help you out. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Indiana, Farmersburg, Indiana. This is line 3. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
An MRI I had back in, just about 2 weeks ago, indicates a multi-level severe degenerative lumbar spondylosis. Particular concern with the right paracentral subtle disc extrusion at L3 and 4, as well as significant L4, 5, and L5S1 neuroforaminal narrowing bilaterally. I'm wondering what would be the possible treatments for this kind of condition, and what other information would help you about me would help you know that?
A couple questions. First of all, I need a geography lesson. Where is Farmersburg?
Well, I'm about 20 miles south of Terre Haute. I live right in the middle of the Fairbanks Wildlife Refuge. So.
Oh, very good. What kind of symptoms were you having that prompted your doctor to order an MRI?
I couldn't get out of bed one morning, and literally took me 20 minutes to get out of bed. I tried to figure out how in the world am I going to turn over here.
Are you having leg symptoms?
Yeah, oh yeah.
With walking?
Yeah, well, pain's down the right leg. I can walk. I walk 3, 4, 5 miles a day.
Okay.
So it's not, when I'm walking, I'm okay. When I lie down, I'm okay for a few hours.
All right.
And when I sit, it's usually uncomfortable.
You have been diagnosed with spondylosis.
Yeah.
Spondylosis means that you've got arthritis in the back and some of your discs are aging before their time.
Mm-hmm. I'm 65, so it couldn't be too far below.
Well, with a smile on my face, I tell patients that and tell them that my theory is they ought to have perfect health until they're 100 and then fall into a pile of dust.
Well, that's great.
But it usually doesn't work that way. So you've got, by x-ray criteria, degenerating discs and arthritis. By MRI, you have narrowing of the spinal canal from disc bulges and from arthritic spurs, and then from the holes where the nerves exit the spine off to either side. There is some narrowing, again caused by disc bulging or spurs.
That's pinching the nerves.
At least rubbing on the nerves, yes. One or more of those areas from L3, L4, L4, L5, or L5S1, for those not knowledgeable of the nomenclature, that would be at the last three levels in the lower back, the last three levels of the lumbar spine. There's not enough room for your nerves. So at certain times, those nerves are rubbed on and send funny signals out and down the right leg. If it could be identified which of those specific areas are causing the problem, it would be possible to widen the space available for the nerves. Now, there are lots of things short of surgery that could help you out also. Some people find avoiding those activities that irritate it is sufficient. Some people find that if they go through those exercises I mentioned before called McKinsey exercises, that can help. Brace or corset helps some people, although not as many as we would like. An injection to coat the nerve with a long-acting cortisone-like drug could help for weeks or months. Obviously, if it's a terrible problem, then surgery to widen the space available for the nerves has a 80-plus percent chance of helping you dramatically. Not of making you 18 or giving you a new back. You'd still have some discs that are older than you'd like. You'd still have some joints that had arthritis in them. But it should help with the right leg symptoms so that you could get your quality of life up a notch or two.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Is there a lot of risk in that kind of surgery?
Most people come through the surgery without any problems at all. I tell people the lights could fall from the ceiling or some other tragedy, and the surgeon could injure a nerve, but that's very low chance, probably 1% or less. Mm-hmm. Your heart could stop, but I tell people your medical doctor or a substitute checks you over to minimize the chance of that.
Yeah. What caused that? What caused the onset of that pain on April 4th, I think it was, or 5th? I just, you know, really became acute suddenly, it seemed like.
In all likelihood, you have spurs that are gradually getting better, gradually larger. Mm-hmm. You have disc bulges that may be getting a little bigger, and your nerve accommodated over the years.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, either you stretch the nerve against a spur or you got a little bit more of a disc bulge. There was some swelling of the nerve, and all of a sudden, there's not enough room for the nerve, and the nerve is letting you know that.
So it's not just a matter of reducing inflammation. We've got a real organic problem here, a structural issue.
You've got a structural issue, and the body responds by, I'm simplifying a bit, but responds by swelling of in the nerve and inflammation, and hence those bad signals get sent out.
Gotcha. Well, thanks for taking that time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Well, thanks for the call. Is it possible to say when you look at various kinds of back complaints that people have, particularly ones that are more serious and that are resulting in a lot of pain, how much genetics contributes to that, so the genetic makeup that you have inherited from your parents, and how much of that is things that we might call lifestyle that would be amenable to some kind of change?
In any one person, we don't know. There are twin studies, however, that show that approximately half of the risk comes from your genes and about half of the risk comes from your environment. As I want to tell people, you can't change who your parents are, but you can change what you do from today forward. So generally, I tell people to change around their lives as in a back booklet and do things that they need to do and want to do in the way that's mechanically best for their back. I tell them to keep their abdominal and back muscles strong so those muscles absorb more of the load and less of the force is transmitted down to the sensitive area. I tell them to keep their weight within 20% of ideal because of the risk, the extra stress, the extra force that has to be absorbed by the abnormal area if you're carrying around extra pounds. Obviously, I give people the cigarette lecture also, since there's a high association between cigarette smoking and back problems.
Okay, let's keep on here. We'll talk next with someone in Champaign. This is line one. Hello.
Hi. Related questions. One has to do with my oldest brother. I don't know whether it's relevant or not, but this is somebody with Parkinson's disease. He was experiencing a lot of back pain, and when they looked into it, they found, I think it was either three or four of the vertebrae had small cracks in them. And when it came around to trying to figure out why that might have happened, they talked about osteoporosis. So I guess one question was, the whole thing seemed a little weird to me, although I don't know very much about this. And the related question is, if this happens sometimes, does that mean that men also need to be concerned about osteoporosis and be taking, they have him now on extra calcium, and I'm just wondering about how common this is and how much older men should be worrying about osteoporosis.
Good question. I don't think the Parkinson's is directly related to the fractures he's experiencing, but certainly it can be indirectly related. My father, for example, has a similar problem with Parkinson's and lost 50 pounds down to 140 pounds, and he's a 6-foot-plus guy. Uh-huh. And part of it was because of his Parkinson's, he couldn't swallow, and the food just didn't taste good. And that combination was devastating to his weight. Also, he lost the ability to walk or weight bear. And that, of course, is one of the stimuli to keep the calcium in the bones. So poor diet that goes with Parkinson's, at least in the in stages, and inability to bear weight contribute to give osteoporosis in that population. Yes, women are affected much more often than men, and usually when men get osteoporosis, there's a lack of testosterone, that good male hormone that's at fault. In this case, I think the osteoporosis or lack of calcium in the bone is secondary to the side effects of the Parkinson's. The treatment in a male would be the same as the treatment in a female. Calcium, vitamin D, sometimes we get enough in the diet, sometimes we need supplements, weight-bearing exercise, and then there are bone hormones that one can take by mouth or injection that are reasonably effective at minimizing and sometimes reversing the osteoporosis. In this case, I don't think that there is going to be a genetic predisposition for you to get the osteoporosis unless you get the Parkinson's also.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks.
You're welcome.
And just again, as a sort of a general point, even though, as you say, that we worry more about women after menopause, their risk of osteoporosis goes way up. So one of the things that I think that physicians have been saying to women of any age, particularly younger women, is when you're younger, make sure that you have some weight-bearing exercise, you make sure you get plenty of calcium so that your bones will be as strong as they possibly can be, so that then maybe you can afford to lose a little bit. Even though it's not as much of a problem in men, the same advice I would think would apply, that men, you also need to make sure that you get calcium. And it's also a good thing to have some weight-bearing exercise, because we also need to have strong bones.
Sounds like you've been listening to some of the experts on the programs you have.
Could be.
I pay attention.
I pay attention. So what do you know offhand what the recommendation for calcium intake for men is? It's not as much as for women.
I can't quote you the chapter and verse on that. But if a person's diet is reasonable, it's generally not a problem for a man, because the diet contains enough, whereas a reasonable diet for a female often does not contain enough.
Okay. All right. Very good. Well, let's go to the next caller. This is Decatur, line two. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for your guest. I have actually seen over the past couple of weeks only, I've seen symptoms similar to the second to last caller with I have lower back pain only when I get out, you know, before I get up to do my activities, when I get out of bed or when I get off an airplane or drive along, when I get out of the car, which I do quite a bit. And the thing is, you know, I'm very physically active. You know, I run 3 times a week. I do a lot of sit-ups, so, you know, stomach abs exercises. And I'm really surprised. It just only showed up in the past couple of weeks, and there has not been any major change in my lifestyle over, you know, in my activities. And I'm only 27, too. So I was wondering what your guest might have to say about that.
Well, I'm impressed. A person that exercises as regularly as you do, it's not fair that you would get a back problem, because you're our poster child. Unfortunately, life isn't always fair. The risk factor that I can see that you have is that you sit a lot in a vehicle. We think that people that spend more than an hour and a half a day in a vehicle are at higher risk of having back problems. You're already doing the right thing by cardiovascular fitness exercise. You're doing the right thing by keeping your abdominal and back muscles strong. And if you're doing some flexibility exercises, that would be perfect. You may want to do some flexibility exercises before you get out of bed in the morning if you're not already doing so. You may want to do that. To have this at age 27 is slightly unusual, not rare, and it is possible that you have some other form of arthritis besides the usual osteoarthritis. Certainly, you could take Aleve or ibuprofen, But I think that it would be best to check out with your medical doctor to see if maybe you have some other form of arthritis. It would be wise to get an X-ray of your lower back, just to be on the safe side and make sure there's not a surprise there. I'm not thinking of cancer-type surprise. I'm thinking of maybe a 5 or 10% chance that you might have some unusual form of arthritis.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And next we go to Urbana, line number 3. Hello.
Hello. Good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a younger brother who turns 58 this summer, and he has multiple myeloma in remission. I'm calling because he complains of back problems. Let me read a couple sentences from what I think is an MRI exam. It's called a long bones metas, M-E-T-A-S-T-A-T-I-C, whatever that is, series. The thoracic spine demonstrates some compression changes in the lower thoracic spine compatible with mild compression fractures, which may well be secondary to multiple myeloma. The long bones show no abnormalities. The skull shows no lytic abnormalities. I see no other significant abnormalities. What can you suggest his problems may be and what he should do?
It's unfortunate that your brother has multiple myeloma.
It's in remission, though.
That's a problem with the marrow where too many cells are made, and that can weaken the bone and cause fractures, or it can actually go back into the spinal canal and put pressure on nerves or the spinal cord. The treatment for multiple myeloma is often radiation or chemotherapy that might include steroids. Either the multiple myeloma itself, the steroids, or the radiation can weaken the bone such that fractures can occur. Obviously, there have been some compression of the bone or fractures that have been diagnosed in the chest region or thoracic spine. You mentioned a couple words, the metastatic series. That is a screening X-ray exam looking at the spine and the arm and leg bones to see if there are any evidence of tumor replacing the bone. Lytic, L-Y-T-I-C, refers to a hole in the bone that could be seen on X-ray, which might indicate that the multiple myeloma was at other spots. The fact that it's not in other spots is a good sign. If your brother has weak bones, those bones could be protected, particularly if there's a recent fracture, by bracing.
Okay.
Minimizing the amount of chemotherapy and radiation could help his bones, but might be detrimental to his long-term health and survival. So he's going to have to talk to his primary care doctor or his oncologist about the medications he's getting to see if there are other alternatives. If he could get on a walking program, some gentle weight-bearing exercise, that would help strengthen the bones and minimize the chance of future compressions or fractures.
He had a chemotherapy with stem cells. He was on thalidomide for extended for several years until he had a couple seizures, likely caused by the thalidomide, and now he's on zoledronic acid. Did have hip surgery. But okay.
Sounds like he's had some bad luck, but the fact he's in remission now is wonderful.
He's kind of amazed that he's alive. Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Next caller is in Effingham County. This is line number 4. Hello.
Yeah, I had a couple questions I want to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
The first one would, if you wanted a second opinion, how would be the best way to get an appointment with your clinic?
Pick up the phone and call the Carl Spine Institute.
Okay, just call for the institute.
Just call. We accept people who refer themselves. We accept people whose doctor refers them. We take whomsoever wishes to be seen.
Okay. Well, my problem is I've got some arthritis in the lower spine, and that makes more pressure on the right leg than it does on the left. See how it's kind of threw that out of joint, one of the vertebrae. And I do exercise and stuff, and I mean, I'm living with it, but I was just wondering if you would have any suggestion that would make an improvement.
That's pretty sketchy on the details. I think that it would be wise to see someone who specializes in spine problems. I think it would be wise to get that person to do a good history, a physical examination, and to review any x-rays that you've had. It sounds like you think there's some arthritis in your back, which would cause soreness and stiffness when in one position for a long time, and that's often accompanied by some of the discs aging and causing low back pain. If you have leg symptoms, such as pain with walking any distance, weakness or numbness, that would indicate some pressure on the nerves. In general, we would stress non-operative management unless you are having lots of symptoms in your legs, in which case an MRI and the potential of an injection or surgery would be considered. But
okay, well, thank you much.
A physician should look at your lifestyle, your weight, other things to see what could be done potentially to get as many years out of your back as possible.
Thank you very much.
All right,
you're welcome.
Thank you. We have about 10 minutes left. In this part of Focus 580, our guest is Dr. James Harms. He's an orthopedic surgeon. He works at Carl Clinic Spine Institute, and the back questions certainly are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Next up, someone in Champaign. This is line one. Hello. Yes.
I think my question might be similar to your previous caller, but I'm a 24-year-old female, and if I'm on an airplane or a bus or in a car for an extended amount of time, I get really bad lower back pain. I do stretches and yoga, and I also ride a bike a lot, but just wondering if there's anything, you know, if that's something I should be concerned about. I mean, arthritis runs in my family, but I don't know.
Yes. Interestingly enough, when one is reclining, the pressure on the discs in the lower back is the lowest. When one is standing, it is intermediate, and when one is sitting, it is the highest.
Oh.
So you're talking about being on an airplane, you're talking about riding a bicycle, and both of those are sitting activities. Is it possible for you, when you're on an airplane, to get up and walk around and stretch? Maybe have a little bag or something under your feet to keep your hips and knees bent? Is it possible that you could continue to bicycle but do some walking or do some other exercises where you're not in the sitting position?
Yeah, I mean, that is possible. I hadn't thought about that. I hadn't thought about that at all. But that's something I could definitely try doing.
I think you would also benefit by getting a Care of the Back booklet, or there's a companion volume that talks about people who have to do a lot of sitting and how to minimize the stress on the lower back. I already mentioned putting something under your feet to keep your hips and knees bent. You can put a rolled towel or even a paperback book behind your lower back when you're sitting to keep your back arched and in a more physiologic position. There are a number of tricks that can be quite helpful for people that sit. I think you'd be a lot worse off if you weren't getting regular exercise and if you weren't getting your stretching exercises. I'm not suggesting that you quit it for 2 weeks, but I bet you'd be a little more stoved up if you, in the old language, if you weren't getting this exercise. So I think you're doing the right thing. You just need to do a little lifestyle tweaking, and I think it could make a big difference.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome.
Thank you. So the two, just let's review here. There are, it sounds like there are two things that you could do if you're, again, if you're on a plane, train, the bus, in the car, spending a lot of time sitting. Two things that you might want to think about. One would be elevating the feet, and the other would be what's going on in that region, what kind of support you're getting for the lumbar, the lower part of your back, that part that's just right above your butt there. That something back there, and I certainly have experienced the fact that I think not all seats in cars or airplanes or everything are terribly well designed to provide that kind of support. So something, putting those two things, something back, lower back, to put something back there, and then something to get your feet up a little bit. the two things you can do?
Those are two relatively simple things that are effective for most people, not everyone. Mm-hmm. And you'll notice in the high-end cars, there now are inflatable lumbar supports or adjustable lumbar supports. And the theory is that if one maintains the sway back or lordosis, that that will more evenly distribute the forces in the back and minimize the aggravation of an underlying degenerative back condition. Hmm.
But that you said something I think it was interesting, and I probably would surprise people, that in fact the greatest load on the back is when you're sitting.
Because of the changes in the position of the joints in one's back when one is sitting versus reclining or standing, that is a problem and may explain why our last caller, in spite of the fact she was only 24 years old, had more symptoms than she would otherwise expect.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. We go to another caller here, Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hi. I've had sciatica I've been diagnosed a couple years ago, and I've heard a lot of people say that you get pain down your legs. But sometimes I get numbness, and I was just wondering if that's normal for sciatica or if that's...
Yes, sciatica, of course, comes from the sciatic nerve. Actually, the term comes from the sciatic nerve. There are four nerve roots in the back that come out of the spine, come together in the buttock region to form the sciatic nerve. The sciatic nerve goes down the back of the thigh to about the knee region where it splits into two nerves. So pain down the back of the leg is generally referred to as sciatica. That can come from any number of causes. The one that I deal with most often is a disc bulge or herniated disc or spur poking on a nerve, but one can get that from a degenerating disc without pressure on a nerve. One can get that from a problem called a spondylolysis or a crack at the bottom of the spine. One can even get it from diabetes causing the nerve itself to send out those negative signals. The nerve carries a number of different fibers. Pain fibers are the one that we know about the most and think of often. But there are also sensory fibers that have to do with the sense of feeling and touching. And that part of the nerve is irritated in you, and that's why you get the numbness. Some people also get weakness when the motor part of the nerve, the conduction through the motor nerves, is interrupted. So numbness is part of what you think of as sciatica.
Okay. And what is the best thing to keep the pain from? Is like stretching, stretching, yoga,
You've got two different approaches. One is try those things you've mentioned and see what works best for you. Maybe change around your life is in a back booklet. But I'd be a little more comfortable if we had a diagnosis. I would suggest checking in with your primary care doctor or whoever would be likely to help with your back to get a diagnosis. Because once you have a diagnosis, then you're more likely to get the correct treatment and not have a lot of false starts doing things that don't work.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Right, you're welcome.
Thank you. And we'll see if we can get one more. Here is a caller in Champaign. It's line one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I am 22 years old, and I, in the last year, have started having really severe back pain when I'm doing activity, when I'm walking long distances or even just, you know, throwing a football around for too long. And I'm wondering if there's any suggestions you can give me. It's in the very lowest part of my back.
Yes, there are lots of causes of low back pain in young people. And if you've not already done so, it would be worthwhile to check in with a primary care doctor or other physician, get an exam, a good history taken, and at least a simple lumbar X-ray.
Okay.
On the other hand, if you wanted to try some things on your own first, I doubt that that would cause any major difficulties and might help you enough so that you would be happy with the outcome. Changing around your life is in a back booklet, or calling the spine center and having a booklet sent to you is a possibility. Certainly, if you would strengthen your abdominal and back muscles, those muscles would absorb more of the load and less of the force would be transmitted down to the area that's giving you a problem. Certainly, for mild to moderate complaints, those things make sense. If your pain is getting increasingly severe or you rate it as severe, I would twist your arm hard to get a specific diagnosis first, because I'd hate to see you suffer for 6 months in exercise and find that there was something else that would have worked better.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much. Well, I think that that's about at the point that we need to wrap up. Any last thing that you'd like to leave with folks, perhaps other than the very basic things that you have mentioned about your lifestyle and how that contributes to back health?
Like most people, each of us take for granted the health that we've been given. And until something goes wrong, we tend not to do the maintenance. Mm-hmm. We're taught that we need to change the oil every 3,000 miles, although some of the newer cars, you don't have to do it quite that often. And we buy into that because it's a major investment. But we take our health for granted. So I would just emphasize that regular exercise is the single most important thing a person can do to have their back be happy in the long run.
All right. Well, there we'll leave it with our thanks to our guest, Dr. James Arms. He's an orthopedic surgeon at Carle Clinic Spine Institute. Thank you very much.
Pleasure to be here again.